Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at NewBalance.com.
All right, welcome everybody to another episode of Tennis Channel Inside In on the Tennis Channel Podcast Network. Mitch Michaels from the Santa Monica Studios. We are in the start of the 2024 Australian Open. Extra day this year, extra tennis to bring to the masses. And I guess this week, a bonus episode. We're doing two shows during the Australian Open, so a bonus episode to start us off down under. His second time on the show, he's an established tennis journalist, previously at places such as the New York Times and the Philadelphia Inquirer, now spearheading the excellent coverage at The Athletic. It's Matt Futterman back again at the show. Matt, joining us from Melbourne, Australia, the grounds of the Australian Open. Thanks for coming back on Tennis Channel Inside In.
Oh, it's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, there's a lot to get to. The extra day, a lot of tennis going on. There's just so many fascinating storylines early. I want to start with this, you know, based on some of the pieces that you've written in the lead up to this event. You know, the excitement factor, and I think you put it in a pretty good context that this is a unique aspect in a unique sport. Why fans should get so excited for the Australian Open. Imagine having a Super Bowl in the third week of the season. So your notes on that and your ability to kind of tell that story, I just wanted to expand on that a little bit. Why fans should be not just excited for tennis in general, but for this tournament.
It is a unique aspect. I mean, it's not completely alone. I guess the only thing I could compare it to is, you know, NASCAR starts off with the Daytona 500, which is the biggest race of the year. Not that I'm a massive NASCAR fan, but I remember thinking that was weird when there was a time in my professional life I had to pay attention to this. So, you know, ideally, I'm not sure it's the greatest idea to have the Australian Open in week three of the season, because then the Grand Slam season kind of goes away for several months. You see in golf that they've got a really nice sort of compact Grand Slam season in golf, which is, you know, which seems to work pretty well. And they even put the Players Championship in there. But this Australian Open, you know, you have so many you have a lot of great stories. You have a lot of comeback stories. You have, you know, older players, younger players. And I can say that, like, on the first day, my two massive takeaways were one, the incredible quality that there is now and depth, which, you know, it just was very striking, and also how the style of play is really evolving and how aggressive it's getting.
Yeah, it's very well said. I think some of the matches on both tours, we saw high-level play early, which is, I wouldn't even say to be expected. You have to come into these tournaments in great shape. You don't have a lot of lead-up. Some players, which we'll get to, did not even play a tournament. But here we are with that extra day of tennis, which, you know, you kind of noted wasn't really exactly the player's idea, but it ended up giving us tennis Saturday night in the States. So I think we'll take it, but I understand that it's not exactly unanimously approved.
Yeah, no, I guess the ridiculousness of it was shown immediately, that it was sort of, it was peddled as, oh, this is going to be great. This is going to stop all these, you know, lower the possibility of late starts. Aryna Sabalenka took the court at, you know, about 11:30 last night after the 4-hour Novak match. And so, you know, revealed the lie. Anyway, this was a way to get, you know, I think they had nearly 90,000 fans here yesterday. Not a great ticket, I would say. And if because there were so few matches and the lines or queues, as they call them down here, to get into the stadiums that were not, you know, Margaret Court or John Kane or Rod Laver that are ticketed, those are really, really long. So I don't know what's great value unless you had one of those tickets, but, you know, you're outside, it's summer, people drinking beer. It seems like nobody was too cranky about it.
Yeah, it's always just nice to have, especially the Australian crowd going, getting involved and getting invested in the tennis. The quality of play certainly helps that. There's a lot of different storylines to get to. I want to start with, you know, the biggest shadow down there being Novak Djokovic. He's won the tournament 10 times. He still looks as fit as ever. He had an opening match last night that was remarkable stuff to watch against 18-year-old Dino Prismic from Croatia, junior Roland Garros champion last year. Gave Novak a match and gave him a great match and fought and played 4 hours of tennis and did not fade. Took Novak to reach another gear to beat him. No shame in that. But that match, a lot of things stuck out to me. The first thing I wanted to say is this kid, Dino Prismic, I know it's one match, Matt, but looks like he has something special. And I came away from it delighted and intrigued to see where he goes from here.
Yeah, it was great. I mean, it was something to watch. And it looked like, I mean, first of all, for a while, he was the better player. I mean, there was a good, hour and 15 minutes, hour and 20 minutes or something like that, where he was just better than Novak. And it wasn't like he was redlining either. I mean, they were just like going toe-to-toe. He was still making some errors here and there. It wasn't one of those crazy things where he was pulling off these miraculous shots. He was just sort of standing in the middle of the ring and trading punches with him. And, you know, Dino Prismac, junior Roland Garros champion, that sounds good, but like, you know, Tommy Paul was junior Roland Garros champion in 2015, has like his breakthrough into the top 30, top 20 in 2023. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, this, it doesn't generally happen at right. 18 that you garner so much respect, and you just saw Novak was just blown away by how good this kid was, how good his attitude was, how fearless he is, how unbelievable that backhand was. I mean, he put it best. He said, I felt like I was looking in the mirror.
Yeah, and we know Novak is going to give credit out when it's earned, and I appreciate that as well. He's not just going to throw compliments off that unless you've proven to him, which this kid did. There was that adjustment period early when you're playing the best where it's you're able to make sure that you can adjust to playing a player of anyone's caliber that good, let alone Novak Djokovic. But delighted to see, and you do, as you mentioned, just the final note on Dino, Matt, he's got areas he can improve. The serve can get better. There's things that can get better, but the granite's there. For Novak, and in that perspective, we came in wondering how fit he was going to be. The wrist injury was out there, looked pretty fine, and it was another example of not playing his best tennis, but doing just enough down the stretch to grind his opponent down and win. And one thing we know, Matt, is in these tournaments, no one knows the two-week process better than Novak Djokovic, and I would suspect that he will only ramp up from here.
Yes, certainly, but he had to go to a place where he did not expect to go last night. He did not expect to be pushed like that. This was not nice player stealing a set or Holger Rune at the U.S. Open a few years ago in the first round where it was just a matter of time before Holger sort of cracked. I mean, he was thinking this might not be my night. And I was thinking, well, 18-year-old qualifier, I guess it's the biggest upset in the first round against a 10-time champion. I guess it's the biggest upset in Grand Slam history, recency bias aside. But it was neat, and it was neat to see. And also what it made me even more comfortable in my thought that, you know, people come up to me and they're like, so how many Grand Slams is Alcaraz going to win? Is he going to beat Novak's record? And I'm always like, I see so much quality that I could see Alcaraz having a great career and winning 12 Grand Slams because there's people like Sinner, there's people like Dino Prismac, there's people like who knows who, there's people like, you know, that are going to appear over the next year. The quality, I said, is just every time, every big tournament, I get more. Yeah. Wow, there's just really good, really great players. I mean, Taylor Fritz, you know, had a death match yesterday with Facundo Diaz Acosta. And he said, you know, he said he went to the net after and shook his hand. And he just said, you know, you are really effing good. and he just, you know, he didn't expect for Facundo Diaz Acosta to like push him that hard on a hard court, which is like where Taylor thrives. I mean, you know, you see Argentinian, you think, oh, probably a dirt baller. And, you know, but I mean, he was pushed to the edge as well. So it's just, again, quality. There's quality everywhere and tough test from the beginning. Tiafoe played Borna George in the first
round. Yeah, and then that was the there's a couple men's guys that you got to that I want to really expand upon, and the Djokovic thing I think is good just to put a bow on him. He seemed like he was in a positive place yesterday. He's got potentially Alexei Popyrin, who will have the crowd support there. It was just good to see that Novak didn't, you know, get rattled and didn't seem, you know, rattled by the fact that he was playing a player that gave him all that he can handle. But I agree, and we're never gonna, you know, criticize someone who wins 12 Grand Slams as an underachiever if Alcaraz has that kind of career. So I'm with you, lockstep.
Yeah, it's gonna be something to watch.
As far as Taylor Fritz goes, and that's one of the players you mentioned, that match was a war. That is the true epitome of, in that March Madness style college basketball reference there, survive in advance. Fritz had a first set that didn't go his way, had an ankle injury that had to get worked on, was playing a player that he said is very good and wanted to make known that, you know, give this guy credit, he played well. Fritz just found a way to get through, and we saw it in the relief after the match, Matt, that sometimes it's not even about what you're doing out there tactically. It's just fight, hang in there, and find a way to get through. That was telling for Taylor Fritz to me that, you know, Australia has been, as you know, the last 2 years, kind of a house of horrors for him. That was a very emotional win.
Oh, emotional and draining. And I was supposed to talk to him after one-on-one, and he came in and talked to the news conference, and then at some point, and then after it was over, it was like, you know, sort of looked like, oh, we're supposed to talk. And I just looked at him and I said, go to sleep. It's like, you know what? He played for 4 hours. He looked like he was going to fall into his microphone in the news conference. And, you know, it was just, he was drained and exhausted and, you know, played pretty sharp. But, you know, he said he walked on pretty confident because he hit it pretty hard since the United Cup. I guess, you know, Michael Russell, his coach, who was known for some torturous workouts, put him through some torturous training the last 10 days to make sure he would stay sharp, because it's been a little while, you know, because they got eliminated early, so it's been a little while. So maybe that came into it, a bit of his slow start. He, you know, he had to get better throughout the match. And yeah, I mean, I think there is a lot, any player will tell you, you know, just survive your first round match, and then you can go ahead with the rest of it.
Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s inspired style and cutting edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at newbalance.com.
More with Matt Futterman here on Tennis Channel Insight. And his fellow American, who you alluded to earlier, Francis Tiafoe, wins a very sharp match for him over Borna Coric. The quality of that match was just exceptional. And the draw that Tiafoe got, and I think that's where I want to start this part of the conversation, Matt, is that he drew a tough hand in Borna Coric, a former Masters champion in the first round. He was playing a guy who brought it early on. And there were some moments in that match that didn't quite go his way. A wet court on break point, certain things that didn't quite, you know, go, some loose games on his end. But he dug in, he stayed focused, and there is something to be said about that for Tiafoe, who's been known at time to have some dips. That was a very clean win over a very game opponent.
What I thought was, what also struck me was that Francis knew exactly what he was in for, which was, and he was ready for it. You know, he clearly knew that this was not going to be, you know, 2 hours and a good night's sleep. Like, Borna was there to do what Borna does, which when he's, and he had a rough time last year, where he was really struggling to win matches. Mm-hmm. You know, Borna's winning matches again. Borna is going to be there for as long as you can. For as long as you're going to be there. He has an engine unlike few people in the tour. He spends more time in the gym than just about anybody. I mean, his muscles have muscles. Yeah. You are not, you know, he is, and Francis, yeah, he just stood in there. Yeah, fourth set, dropped a little bit, but, you know, he was maybe slightly lucky to win the second set. Borna had, you know, he kind of gave away some opportunities. could have been a little more dangerous, but you know, he sharpened up and showed that he's ready for this.
Knowing what he's in for is well put, because last year, as we know, in the match against Hatchinoff, had a 6-1 lead in a tiebreak, lost that set, lost the match as a result. So knowing start to finish, you have to be locked in. And also, got to say with Francis, Tiafoe at night, Tiafoe after dark is kind of becoming a thing, because he's doing a great job of playing smart tennis, but that showman's always there. And you see when he plays, the crowds really take to him regardless of what continent he's on.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure Francis is no stranger to the small hours of the morning in tennis and in life. He's very comfortable in that atmosphere. But again, when I was referring earlier to the sort of shift in style, you know, I would point to him very quickly. He was coming in. I didn't look at the numbers, but you could just see how the urgency that Diego Maiano is the new coach he's working with. I guess the new old coach he's working with, because Diego was there back when those guys were kids. And, you know, the urgency that he is trying to get forward in the court is, you know, it's a striking difference from what he was doing all last year. He mentioned it in Hong Kong, and it's nice to see him sort of like he came in with a game plan and he pursued it.
Well, somebody else that you've covered that would have been the biggest upset of the day in either tournament and would have been an outright catastrophe but was avoided, Andre Rublev holds on against Thibaut Schwild in that 5-set match that was 2 sets to love, looked like it was a standard routine Rublev day at the office until it wasn't. Rublev had a bunch of match points, didn't convert on any of them, went to a tiebreak, wins, drops down to his back to, you know, have that emotional release. But it's a guy that's been open about his struggle, as you've covered, for mental peace and dealing with his emotions, which he does in a very public, some would say relatable method. But Rublev hung in there again. It wasn't pretty and it would have been a disaster, but full marks to him for just getting to the finish line.
Yeah, that was definitely a case of, you know, you saw why one guy is ranked below 100 and has to qualify to get into these tournaments and the other guy is number 5. I mean, you know, when it got super tight and the match was there for Thiago to take, you know, his arm just got a little tight. You know, like Rublev, his arm just got tight and his serve changed. And Rublev said, like, I got lucky. I got lucky. He gave me, he gave me a bunch of second serves. And, you know, there's a reason he gave him a bunch of second serves, is because he didn't hit the first serves when it counted. And Rublev hit first serves when he needed to in that tiebreaker. I was super impressed at the way he didn't sort of hit the panic button the way he has at times.
What's something you've kind of, I guess, learned or observed from being around Rublev and seeing, because we can all see it on the outside, right, how passionate he is and how emotional he is and how that can be a good thing, but it can also be a bad thing at times. And as he's progressed and his ranking has gotten steadily better, but he's still searching for that first Grand Slam final. What's, you know, something you've learned from being around Rublev?
It's just that great contrast of, you know, I mean, as he puts it, he looks at tapes of himself on the court and he doesn't recognize himself because it's completely not him. And, you know, he's like the sweetest, most soft-spoken, self-deprecating guy there is. I mean, I don't know, maybe there's someone on the tour who's got bad things to say about Rublev. I haven't met him yet. And he's just, you know, he's so well-liked. And I think Daniil, you know, put it best when he said he's the kindest person in tennis. And he gets on the court and he, you know, makes some mistakes, as everybody does on the court. And he struggles to be kind to himself. It's almost like if he treated himself as well as he treats other people, he would, you know, he would be there. And the other thing is just so striking is how much it bothers him when he loses control, because he knows he shouldn't be losing control. He's not one of these people, you know, you go back to McEnroe, who's, you know, and Connors, who can talk chapter and verse about how they could use, you know, anger, and Djokovic too, you know, how they improve, they raise their level sometimes and sort of wakes them up. And yeah, it doesn't go that way with Rublev. He starts getting angry and he goes down the death spiral mostly. Yeah. So, you know, it's, you know, if you're his opponent and you see it's happening, you know, you just sort of sit there and watch it. And, you know, and he knows that. He knows all of this and he's working on it and, you know, trying to get to a point where he's he can control it better.
Well, we just, you know, we appreciate the passion. We just don't want to see him hurt himself out there. That's the one thing.
Exactly.
Just that racket can be a weapon.
Yeah. That bloody knee in turn was just, I mean, you're watching him hit himself with his racket, and that was sort of, that was over the edge. That was something you don't see pretty much ever. I mean, you see people break rackets on their, you know, on the court, do things like that. You don't see people, you know, harm themselves that way all that often.
Well, I want to switch to the women and talk about some storylines there for a few. And the number one for me, we got to give props to, is taking out the 13th seed was Amanda Anisimova. Beat Samsonova in straight sets. It's not so much the win, which was impressive. Obviously, wasn't Samsonova's best match. There was the comeback in the second set. But this whole process for Anisimova, Matt, to find that she was ready to play tennis, took a mental break, has had a lot going on personal and injury-wise in her life, takes the time off and picks up where she left off last year after a successful run in Australia, takes out a top 13 seed, looks pretty good, and more than anything, more importantly than anything, Matt, looks like she's enjoying tennis.
Yeah, I think she's sort of like at a certain level of peace. I mean, for those people who are not sort of familiar with her story, I mean, her father was her coach and had a heart, I think had a sudden heart attack, you know, at rather a young age. I think he was about 50 or so, and she was 19, 20, something like that. And, you know, I think you go through something like that. And, you know, I think like how, when you've gone through an experience like that, how is it that walking onto a tennis court just doesn't automatically make you sad? Because your associations with, I mean, I know people who don't have that relationship with their parent, who nevertheless, you know, in terms of like a parent and a coach and spending all that time together, you know, lose a parent at an early age. And it's something that just it's your identity for the rest of your life. And I don't say that in a bad way, like not getting over it, because it's not something you ever get over. It just becomes a part of you. And so, you know, she took this time off. I think it's probably something she should have done, you know, years ago. You know, maybe it would have helped, you know, the grieving process. It's almost like, I almost sort of feel like maybe, you know, maybe she took the time finally to really grieve, you know, without trying to be a professional tennis player at the same time. And she just seems to be breathing a little easier, you know? You know, she's going to win matches, she's going to lose matches. She's you know, talking about yesterday, accepting that. So yeah, I think it's good. Yeah, sure. It's great to see her winning a match, but it's just honestly good to see her being able to do something she loves and that she's been doing since she was a child.
Another one, right, where we do this in tennis and sports all the time. I can't believe how young someone is, still just 22 years old, feels like she's been around forever. And it's great, as you said, I agree with all those points. Great that she's there and has found joy in the game again. I still go back to when I did watch her practice a few years ago. She was one of the best pure ball strikers I've seen. You see a lot of the skill set that's there. And we think and we hope we'll only get better as more match toughness develops. So props to her. I wanted to give her some credit as the rest of the women are starting up. And last night was the first night. We've got some more matches, some upsets really today as we record this. But looking at it from the top of the field, Matt, and I guess your perspective going into this, does it feel like there is, I guess, going into this tournament, a big four situation on the women's side? Does it feel like there's those top four, Iga, Sabalenka, who won handily last night, Rybakina and Coco, who just won as we record this? Does it feel like they're on a perch a little tier above the rest of the field?
I mean, I think they are until they aren't, you know? I mean, you know, someone was asking me, for instance, you know, we were talking about Pegula, and someone said, like, well, could Pegula ever win a Grand Slam? And I said, well, look who's won Grand Slams on the women's side over the last few years. Like, of course she can win a Grand Slam. Like, if Marketa Vondrousova can win a Grand Slam from, I don't know what she was ranked at the time, let's say in the 40s, something like that, And of course, Will can win one. Like, will the draw go away? You know, will that, you know, things have to happen.
For sure.
You know, but I mean, Svitolina looks incredible right now. Yeah. Is she ready? If we get to the middle of next week and, you know, Coco Rybakina, Sabalenka, and Iga are still standing, like, is it likely that one of them
right.
probably going to win? Yeah, but you know, there's still a good bit of quality out there.
I mean,
I wouldn't want to play Leila Fernandez in an early round. You know, you're going to be in for a battle with her. She's playing much more aggressively. Seems to have found found some answers.
Right.
You know, Naomi Osaka. You want to play Naomi Osaka on Saturday after she's got a few matches under her belt. This is assuming she can beat Caroline Garcia tonight. But so you know, it's like I said, there's a big four until there isn't.
Yeah, a lot of names there I wanted to touch on, and you know, starting with the defending champ Sabalenka. She looked great last night. The test will only increase from here. But the question with her is dealing with the pressure. And you know, there is a comfort that she's won here before, but I do wonder, Matt, I think we'll see how she handles defending this title. But that said, I think there is a possibility that this could be the comfort zone for her because she doesn't have the scar tissue and the not winning it that she has at the other majors, because she was the most consistent player in majors last year. But this would be the first time she's ever had to defend a major title.
Well, I'm pretty sure she's not going to face an Australian in the final. Okay, unless some miracle happens and Storm Hunter, who won today, somehow makes it through, or someone like that. But so, you know, I mean, if she's not facing a hometown favorite in the U.S. Open, she probably has a little better shot than playing Coco. So, I mean, I think that, you know, that helps her. I think the courts here are just set up so perfectly for her and Rybakina. You know, they're like medium fast, and they just, those flat hitters, it just, the ball just kind of shoots through the court in a way that Iga's ball last year did not. I don't know what, you know, maybe she's making some tweaks in her forehand and tweaks in her serve. So, you know, we'll see, but I'm still a little shocked that Rybakina lost that final last year, but she was obviously right there.
Right.
And if she was going to lose to anyone, it was going to be to something of a carbon copy of herself in Sabalenka.
Yeah, Iga the last 2 years, and she's looked unreal, winning all her matches at the United Cup this year, but losing to Rybakina, losing to Danielle Collins, the theme being big hitters who've had a little more pace, and the ball is kind of shooting off of her racket. So we'll see. Iga's just so rock solid. And Coco being one, Matt, who, you know, the news came out, you know, the serve is getting some lessons from Andy Roddick, and she's tweaking it up a little bit. And this is the reigning major champion heading into this. She won the last one on hard court as well. But, you know, if the serve gets better, and this is somebody that's already an accomplished champion, but that would be something that could propel her to even greater heights.
Yeah, look, Coco's going to get better. I mean, I think she was right when, I think around last year at this time, she said she was like 65% of herself, or somewhere around that range. You know, she's gotten better. She's probably put herself at like 75% now, but Coco's just gonna get better, and people are gonna have to deal with it. She's 19 years old, you know. It's inevitable that she's gonna keep working. She does not. I mean, she said the other day she wants to win double digit slams. I mean, I want to win double digit slams.
It'd be nice.
I don't think I'm going to. I think she's probably got a much better chance than I do. But still, I mean, if you think about it, like, you know, think of great players. Most of them did not win double digit slams. But that's her. You know, Venus Williams doesn't have double digit slams.
I know.
Maria Sharapova doesn't have double digit slams. Kim Clijsters doesn't have double digit slams. I mean, you know, these are some pretty good players. And so, if you understand where her mind is in terms of where she wants to get, and she knows you don't just get there. You got to go there.
Wrapping up here with Matt Futterman on Tennis Channel Insight In, starting off the second day of the Australian Open. Want to discuss a few more players and then just put a bow on this discussion, let you get back to outstanding work down there in Melbourne. But Naomi Osaka, a player you referenced here and a player you wrote a recent piece on, her return to the court, played a couple lead-up events, you know, was not able to beat Pliskova in her second match, but is back playing tennis, saying and doing all the right things, enjoying the process of being a tennis player, and she drew Caroline Garcia in the first round. So that's what that reward gets you, is a very tough player in the first round of a very deep WTA field. But your thoughts on how she's doing, getting the chance to interview her and be around her, and also her prospects going into this match with Garcia and what could happen after that.
I think she's thinking, yeah, I drew Caroline Garcia, and she's thinking how miserable Caroline Garcia is for drawing her. Mm. I mean, there's no player who's, you know, ping pong ball was in the bowl that a seeded player, you know, wanted to draw less than Naomi, especially after what, you know, I think most people would say was a pretty darn good, a pretty darn good first couple of matches. You know, yeah, she didn't win the second. She lost in three sets to Pliskova. Pliskova is a hell of a good player. And, you know, there's no shame in that. Yeah, it's just a matter of, like, her match readiness. And, and you know, but the tennis is there. There's no question. The tennis is there. The movement is there. She does so many things so well. And she's won here twice before, you know? She's walking onto Rod Laver. And the last, not the last time she was here, but you know, not long ago when she was here, she was, raising a trophy. So she's a hell of a player. And, you know, she beat Serena here. She's done it all. She's in a good spot. I think, a lot of people would love to see her make some noise in this tournament.
She knows how to win here. She sees her picture when she walks onto court, and so do the opponents that she play. Sees that Naomi Osaka trophy thing twice as they walk out. So I'm with you there. I think the process is only going to get better, and there is something to be said for both the men and the women. If you have a tough draw early, but you win that match, you come in really match tested and ready to roll. So I'm excited to see that matchup. That's going to be a barn burner as well. I had to ask you too, before we finished up here, the Maria Sakkari news of her changing her racket. I don't think that got enough discussion, because that was a pretty big, a player that's been through the gauntlet emotionally, a very emotional player, still, had that breakthrough, but looking for Grand Slam success. But for her to change her racket after 10 years using the same stick is kind of a big deal, I would think.
I think it's a big deal. I also think when she was explaining it, I asked her about it, and I was kind of amazed that she hadn't changed before. That's what was amazing to me, because she said she'd been using the same racket for 10 years. Like, look at pictures of Maria Sakkari 10 years ago. She doesn't look like Maria these days. So, like, it would only make sense that she would have changed her racket as she got stronger. I mean, she said, I was using a very powerful racket. I don't need that much power anymore. What I needed was more control. And when I heard that, I was like, yeah. I was kind of amazed that, like, no one said that to her or no one suggested to her, but I guess she was having good success. And so she didn't, and it is, people get very comfortable with their rackets. She's almost 30 years old at this point. I mean, using the same tool at 30 that you use at 20 seems different. Seems interesting, especially as your body changes. I would think more people whose body changes like that would make some changes along those lines.
Well, she's somebody that's been on the doorstep in the top 10 so long. It's going to be a very fascinating run for her this year in Australia to start out. Matt Futterman from The Athletic, make sure you catch all of his articles and stuff there during this entire Australian Open run. Before I let you go, anything else that stands out we didn't get to, players that have stood out or things you're looking forward to. As we record this now, Medvedev is down a set, so we're going to timestamp that. Korda and Shelton are in action, leading their respective matches. And we saw Vondrousova lose to Yastremska as well in thorough fashion for Yastremska. But those results or anything else stand out to you so far?
I'm just looking, you know me, I'm just looking forward to watching Arthur Fils take the court.
Yeah.
And see how far he can go, because at one of these things, he's going to suddenly go far. And it's just a matter of which one it's going, I think. And so it's just a matter of which one it's going to be. I'm circling matches that Dimonar is playing. Because it's just, he's had a great run the last few weeks. He's coming into his favorite tournament. He's got 30 million, a country of 30 million strong paying attention and behind him. And, if there's 15,000 people in Rod Laver Arena, it's going to sound like 50 when he's playing. And so I think seeing this new sort of Dimonar 3.0 version, who's not just running sideways, but has definitely added some power to his game and some pop. Seeing that version on the big stage, you can tell he's just like frothing at the mouth to do it. And so I'm looking forward to seeing that.
I can't wait. It's been a long time coming from Dimonar to get into the top 10. And yes, the power is there. It's going to be exciting. And remember to timestamp all these discussions because the results in the tennis just keep changing. Matt Futterman, always a pleasure. We're going to check out all your stuff on The Athletic as well as your commentary on Twitter, on social media going forward. But thanks for joining Tennis Channel Insight, and you're always welcome. And I feel like I can speak for the audience. We all learned something here and you talk tennis.
Thanks so much. I really appreciate it.
That was Matt Futterman. This was Tennis Channel Insight. We're on all your podcast platforms. Go to tennis.com/podcasts. Check us out on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, iHeart, to name a few. We're back next Thursday. More Australian Open to cover, more results, more outstanding guests such as Matt Futterman. I'm Mitch Michaels, your host. Thank you for listening. I'll talk to you later in the week. Enjoy the tennis, everyone.